This finna be a breeze.
Yard full of grass, waking up though. Stealing my shit, who I'm making it for? House on the hill with the lake in the fall. Old ass nigga should be taking it slow. So what, know what, your cut ain't mine. Nigga, get up off my line. I'm back to the basics, tracing shit. Gangbang nigga with the bass and shit. Real P.I. with amazing spit. So I never have.
Hello and welcome to Weekly Beats, the podcast in which two guys give you their perspective on the week in music. My name is Charlie.
My name is Terry.
And this week on the show, we have an amazing collaboration. We're pulling what we call an EP roundup. Maybe you're familiar. If not, here's how it's gonna work. Instead of listening to one album on the week, we got three EPs we're gonna take a look at. The first of which in the starring spot is Make America Crip Again, the latest EP from Snoop Dogg, who's been very busy over the past couple of years, still churning out new music. We'll also finally take a look at that No Plan EP from David Bowie, released last year, containing the final three songs of his career. And then, Mark, help me out with this one. It's a band with a bunch of cymbals.
Yeah, no, I think you're just about as equipped as I am to dig into that.
For the listeners at home, I have no idea how you're going to look this up, but it's right parentheses star with three dots over top of it, asterisk, with their album Braille Letters... a circle, brass knuckles, flying bird, holy trinity, the walking stick, pie, a longer flying bird, but it's got like a funky looking wing, Groucho Marx glasses, another donut, and brass knuckles. So that's three songs. Mark, you've dug that up somehow. I have no idea when or where you did, but we're going to listen to it and talk about it. And then after that, we will segue into the 30-second breakdown on the show with the Billboard Hot 100. This week, that place belongs to G-Eazy with his song No Limit. And, of course, A$AP Rocky and Cardi B on that song. Mark, I'm excited to hear some more Cardi B.
Yeah, I want to understand Cardi B better than I do.
I'm with you, too. We got a lot more to learn about her. But after that, we'll talk a little bit more about other stuff we've been listening to and answer some listener mail. But before we get into that, Mark, how you been here? We're 2 weeks into January now. Have you fallen off in your resolution yet?
My resolution to... what was my resolution? Did I say a resolution last week?
I already forgot. Oh, I think you did, but I already forgot it.
I think my resolution was just to be like more reflective, try to be a nicer person.
Yeah.
Stop... That shoving sounds right. People on the sidewalk, stop throwing bricks at mailboxes and cats, and stop setting garbage fires at towns I visit.
I'll have you know that... What? No. What? No resolutions for me whatsoever. No bummers. Still no bummers in 2018. That's it.
Okay.
That's all I care about.
Do you consider resolutions a bummer?
Maybe. Because it's like, if you don't get it, then that's a major bummer, you know?
Yeah.
So, if I don't have any resolutions and just say no bummers allowed, then, hey, we're just chilling.
I also think if you are trying to hinge your life-changing goal on an arbitrary date, that means you've been procrastinating. And you probably need to figure out how to get over the procrastinating part rather than just set it on this date and set yourself up to fail.
And there's your resolution right there.
Oh, crap. Well, now it's a feedback loop. And now I'm doomed to fail.
You're doomed to resolve yourself constantly until you can't resolve anything else.
Okay. I'm like at a solved equation. You already know the beginning, the middle, and the end.
That sounds like an Arcade Fire album. So have you noticed that America's been more Crip recently, Mark?
I've noticed that it used to be Crip, and I've noticed it's returning to Crip.
Yeah.
It seems more Crip now.
Well, I want to think that's thanks to Snoop Dogg, who has vowed to make America Crip again. This is the EP. I think it was out in October of last year. It's got, 8 songs or so on here with a number of features from OT Genesis, Chris Brown, Ha Ha Davis, October London and Designer Flow, and Sean Lawn, which I promise are all real people in the hip-hop and rap scene and not just made-up names. Right. So Snoop Dogg has been very busy. He's been pretty consistent with one album a piece every year or so for the past few years, not one to stay quiet. And I found that stuff to be decent, you know, not necessarily mind-blowing, but not bottom-tier rap music either. Certainly someone that's still eager to put out new music. And Mark, while there are some moments of positivity on this thing, I gotta say, I'm not super digging the Make America Crip Again. Right down to the opening track, which I think might just be the worst track on this thing, to the point where I think it's a bad track. I think the backing vocals are bad. I think the sample is bad. I think lyrically it's not very good at all. This for me was fine. It ended up being okay to listen to, but I didn't have the best time with Make America Crip Again.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that's the track you're picking out as the low moment, because it felt like the only moment of, I guess, any like consequence. Because I guess it kind of seems like I recently read that Ben Westhoff book about the West Coast rap and the origins of it, and I now know weirdly a lot of details about the life of Snoop Dogg.
Good.
Like where he comes from and how he's gotten here. And how much of a salesman he is, like how much his concerns are with staying relevant as much as that's important to his brand.
Making money.
Yeah, which is fine. And I feel like he needs a good producer. And a lot of these tracks, there's a wide variety in production styles. Sort of across his career, like I think you get a little bit of the G-Funk Snoop Dogg. I think you get a little bit of the like Drop It Like It's Hot Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
But both feel aged. Like the sample being used in Make America Crip Again, something about it just feels real old and low production value.
Very low. Yeah.
There are moments on it where the production value is higher. It's a little bit more of a modern song, like a weekend song, but
yeah.
A track like Three's Company or Sports right. Center, but like those tracks have their own problems, namely Chris Brown is featured
lyrically. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, like I like Snoop Dogg kind of a lot, but this felt that album, the name of this album indicates to you that he is going to come out swinging, and I instead feel like he's just remained where he is sitting, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is a bold political statement, right? To open up with the alternate album cover with the blue hat, which is actually not the real cover. Did you see the real cover is a dead body with a toe tag that says Trump on it?
No.
Yeah. So they didn't sell that one or didn't put it out there because it was too controversial. But this one's a little bit more straightforward.
It's a bad look. The alternate cover looks bad.
Yeah, I don't really care for either one all that much. But he opens up, you know, saying, hey, the president says he wants to make America great again. Well, forget that. We're going to make America crip again, cuz. And so it's kind of like direct political statement here. But then aside from some minor political quibbles that he throws into this track, there's almost no other space on this EP where he delves into politics. It's a lot of personal stuff. It's a lot of party bangers. It's a lot of highlighting other rappers. And you could say, hey, here's Uncle Snoop Dogg, right? He calls himself his uncle at one point on this EP, saying, I'm here to teach the youngins and bring them up. So maybe it's like a showcase for younger voices to bring them into the fold and kind of say, like, I'll pat you on the back. Because he did just drop that album, Never Left, last year. So it's not like he didn't have something else that came out. And certainly he is not, I would even say, in the forefront on this album. He spends maybe half of this EP in front of the microphone. Even on this first track, we get that whole annoying hook of that, hey, young world, the world is yours. And it's so simple. It's so simplistic. It's so annoying. And like you said, the beat is so simple, so underproduced. It feels budget. It just like nothing here feels prescient or necessary or engaging. And like, honestly, this first track left a real bitter taste in my mouth.
Yeah. It sounds like a Soulja Boy track, like, which is
that's a great point.
Nothing Snoop Dogg produces should sound like a Soulja Boy track. Soulja Boy sound like a bad version of Snoop Dogg for a while. Like,
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I like the idea of the album. I like the idea that he's going to feature new voices. And he has that in the very opening. Sounds like a very young kid going out, like he's about to drop a verse somewhere. And that's good. Like, that's a good framing device. But the album just, or the EP, I guess, just kind of falls off after that. You're right. I mean, it's the second you get into Three's Company, which, again, it's extremely hard to feel good about a track with Chris Brown on it.
Right.
But it just drops all that. And, like, even the instinct of the album, which is to lift voices up or to say something more, is just kind of forgotten about. And he gets into more political stuff later. There's, I guess, a little bit more substance to the lyrics in later tracks. But for the most part, I don't know if Snoop Dogg has ever tried to be that prescient before. And now that he is, I think he needs more help from the producer to actually get that point across, because his lyrics aren't carrying the baton so good.
For sure. You mentioned that Chris Brown track, Three's Company. I think it's the best produced, the best sounding track on the album. But like you said, throwing in his presence just leaves it covered in slime. And like, you don't really want to spend a whole lot of time with that. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to, just on the note of Chris Brown, because I was thinking a lot about this, like, that is such an obviously bad choice. Like, it's hard to imagine why Snoop Dogg would feature Chris Brown. Unless you look at his entire career, it kind of makes perfect sense.
Right.
The one thing that I learned about him, and it's in some ways an admirable trait that obviously can lead to issues on a wider scale than interpersonal relationships, but he is an extremely loyal dude to the point where in his life he has defended people who he didn't believe were right. That's just the kind of guy he is. Whenever someone sticks by him, he will stick by that person regardless. And it takes time for him to break away from that person. But the reasons why people accepted Dr. Dre in the 90s and his being a producer and his being successful, standards are different now.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't do that.
Right. Guess,
like,
and it's frustrating, I guess, when you have that political dissonance, when you come in trying to make a bold political statement and it doesn't land. That's inherently frustrating. And, just sort of makes you scratch your head and think, like, if you can't nail this thing, maybe you shouldn't go for that.
Yeah.
I don't know. We saw so many folks feeling like they had to make a political statement last year, but not having the knowledge or the gravitas to make an important message, or just not realizing that it's not their message to make, you know? I think old Snoopy got caught by the same forces here.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think it's good to have artists trying to engage a little bit more in modern discourse. I think the 2000s for pretty much every genre were like a decade of escapism. I mean, with obviously certain artists accepted from that. And a lot of artists who came to prominence in that time, so, you know, unsurprisingly, are not as equipped to handle the big topics as people who have always been handling those topics, I guess. So it's fine. I don't care that much that this isn't a powerful political statement. Mm-hmm. I just don't see Snoop Dogg as the dude who's going to do that. And I think that's fine. Like that's not his role in the world. That's totally fine. But I do find myself disappointed with just that these beats sound the way they do.
Yeah.
That's really, like, I think his lyrics are fine. They're clumsy sometimes and they're a little he stumbles over his own ambitions occasionally, but I don't think personal offense to anything he said.
Sure.
I'm amazed that this album sounds the way it does, though, in spots. Like, I don't know. How about, would you mind playing a track, a clip from This Finna Be a Breeze?
Yeah.
Trees. This finna be the breeze. it just doesn't sound like it sounds so much cheaper.
Yeah.
Like it's just amazing static. To me.
Yeah. And even going back onto Never Left, which I listened to for the first time this past week here, immediate jump in quality. Like that sounds more in line with today's modern production. And I don't know if it is just because it's an EP that he's like, yeah, we don't have to go all out on this thing. And we got a lot of young voices in here that are trying to make their splash. Right. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think this is like in any way indicative of where his career is or is going.
Right.
But
he's
it's
put
like
out a lot
of those...
stuff recently.
Sure. And in a stage in his career in which you wouldn't expect him to. Like, I get that. But like at the same time, I don't know. I'm just surprised it sounds the way it does.
I guess it's just it's flat. It's uninteresting. It's unengaging. It's not where I want it to be.
Yeah.
You mentioned that SportsCenter is one of the better sounding tracks. I think I'll agree with you there. And I think Designer Flow does a nice job on that track as well. For the repetition of that chorus, trap jumping like a ball player, you'd think I'd get annoyed by it because of my previous tendencies. But I think it works pretty well in the beat and the aesthetic there. I like that track quite a bit.
I think it just has a contemporary aesthetic that isn't going for trap. Like,
yeah.
This Finna Be a Breeze is like, so it has that plus for me that it's not trying to artificially recreate a sound or something. But I still find SportsCenter to be boring. Like, I don't think it's actually a compelling.
Okay. So do you have highlights on this thing?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to take Make America Crip Again.
Okay.
I agree with your points, but
yeah, it's just, I mean, I like the song. I don't think lyrically it's all that good, and the beat is pretty weak.
Yep, agreed.
Hmm.
But it's all right. I mean, I don't know. I think it's disappointing. Like, it doesn't sound good, but it was interesting for me to listen to that. It was interesting for me to hear Snoop Dogg make a direct political statement that wasn't, I don't know, in some way related to parties or the club or street life. Mm-hmm. Like, this was I'm making an adult statement about where politics are. And that's interesting to hear Snoop Dogg do that. So
what do you think he means by Make America Crip Again?
You know what? I have no idea.
But you like it. It's provocative. Gets the people going.
Yeah, I feel like there's just Snoop Dogg language that I'm just not familiar with. I'm not on the up and up with the Snoop Dogg lexicon, I suppose.
All right. So MACA is the one highlight you're taking here?
Yeah, that's right.
All
right.
Well, I will take SportsCenter and throw in my best tracks from last year and call it kind of a disappointment. Not a whole lot to say about it.
Yeah.
It's You know what's not a disappointment?
It's pizza, generally.
Yes, but you know what else?
Ice cream, generally.
Yes, but you know what else?
Oh, I'm only disappointed by things. I can't come up with more examples.
How about No Plan, the EP from David Bowie?
Yeah.
Were you disappointed by this?
Are you digging it? No, but I think it's
definitely... That was very defensive.
No! I feel like these are definitely some B-sides.
Okay. Well, let's talk about No Plan. This is, the final three tracks that Bowie created in his final months? Is that accurate?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like, these were part of the Lazarus sessions.
What does that mean?
Or, sorry, the Black Star sessions.
Okay.
These were recorded at that time.
Yeah. Okay.
And they did not make the album.
So the EP is four tracks. Lazarus is on here again, along with three new ones: No Plan, Killing a Little Time, and When I Met You. Interesting to put Lazarus on here at the very forefront. There's nothing really changed, right? It's just the same track. It sounds similar to me.
Yeah, it's just the single, I guess.
Yeah.
For the EP or whatever.
Great to revisit that track. You and I think, both had that at number two in 2016 for track of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Consistently the second best track of the year.
I can't remember anymore.
Yeah. We both loved it.
Yeah.
No question.
What could... Oh, I know it beat it. Never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a great track.
Yeah. Fun to revisit it again. You know, all these months later, it is still effective, still powerful. One of the best songs that Bowie's created.
Yeah, like listening to it now, it's clearer than ever why so many of his tracks on the final album were, or at least the two singles, were very long.
Mm-hmm.
They're such an experience.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of time to meditate in those tracks. And I was kind of expecting almost for an EP to have some sort of like radio edit version of the single. And I'm kind of glad that that doesn't exist. I think Lazarus wouldn't work unless it was this long.
Here's what I think, Mark. I think Lazarus is on here for a very specific reason.
Okay.
In that it is the initiation to a little mini story that's being told here.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So follow me. We've got the Lazarus. We've seen the music video. We know it's him kind of like lying in his bed. And so these, I believe, are his true final moments. That Black Star is maybe a bit more romanticized and a bit more whimsical and mysterious in the way it doesn't give everything away, pun intended. But with this one, we get glimpses of the afterworld, we get his final moments, and we get the goodbye to the love of his life before he departs us forever. So we've got No Plan, which is kind of a mysterious song about a place that has no plan, that is a city. There's no music, he says here. I'm lost in streams of sound. All the things in my life. Here is my place without a plan. All the things that are my life, my moods, my beliefs, my desires, me alone, nothing to regret. This is no place, but here I am. This is not quite yet. He's kind of getting those glimpses of maybe an afterlife or the absence of one, sort of hallucinating or struggling with what's coming next for him. Moving into Killing a Little Time, we get him literally on his deathbed with lyrics there. I'm falling, man. I'm choking, man. I'm fading, man. I'm broken, blind. I love the sound of an empty room, the screams of night, the end of love. Two beating hearts, one labor scarred, one open wound, wasted and drowned, no sympathy, this furious rain. I lay in bed, the monster fed, the blood, the body bled. Literally, he is going through the death process there. And then finally on Before I Met You, or When I Met You, he is saying adieu to the love of his life. That you became the center of my world, the seams of my life, the streams of daydream. When I met you, I could not speak. I met you, then I met you. I was torn inside. I could not trust a thing. I was not good before I met you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a much more beautiful way to say goodbye to someone than like a miracle goodnight kind of thing. You know, all due respect to what's come before.
You just want to talk best on Miracle Goodnight.
Yeah. I think musically it's maybe not as engaging as a track like Lazarus or Black Star, but I like the sort of like double time ride cymbal beat in Killing a Little Time. I like the ambient wanderings of No Plan. I think When I Met You is maybe the weaker track on here, but for a four-song EP, including one of the best songs of 2016, I had a really good time with this. I think it's a great way to say goodbye to Bowie. And certainly not near Black Star's level in terms of quality, but still really good.
Right.
Still worth time.
Yeah. I mean, I like your narrative there about this being like an epilogue.
Yeah. Or at least sort of a different branching path of the Lazarus narrative, you know?
Right.
Like if Lazarus were to continue on and become a four movement piece, it would look something like this.
Yeah. I like that. But I think where like for me, I guess what No Plan was best at was reminding me why Black Star was such a perfect album. Mm. Like what made that album so compelling, and why these tracks wouldn't have so easily fit on there. I think Black Star would be a worse album with pretty much any of these tracks, especially I would say Killing a Little Time, which because I think Dollar Days is so similar in rhythm that it almost makes that track obsolete. Yeah, I think like there's some really interesting moments. Like I don't, to be clear, where this criticism is coming from, like I don't think you should have it. Like these are B-sides. Like I don't think there should be an expectation that this is going to be like
Black Star 2.
Yeah, totally.
White Star.
But I yeah.
Sounds a little different in 2018, doesn't it?
It really sounds much worse. I actually, it's funny because this is the second EP we reviewed now where the highlight for me is when I met you, because it's the one that sounds, it diverges in sound the most. Mm. It sounds closer to like a straight up indie rock track than anything on the EP or the album.
Yeah.
There's a strong bass presence mm-hmm. in it, and there's a lack of complexity or a shift in rhythm that made me, it made me take note of it. Because I don't think No Plan or Killing a Little Time, I think they're interesting tracks, but I don't know if their sudden divergence into chaos or shifting to a new sound midway through are as subtle as what's on the album proper. Whereas I think When I Met You is just like a solid B-side. Like I will listen to When I Met You outside of the context of this album or this EP.
When I think about Black Star, I think I'm struck most by the lead singles there, Black Star and Lazarus, being hugely important tracks on the year, but also in mm-hmm. Bowie's career, and the way they incorporated jazz and experimentation in really interesting ways. And the same is true of a lot of the other songs on there, you know, the bizarre lyrics. It was an album that was fairly experimental in nature, and these don't feel experimental really at all. They feel much more traditional. When I Met You and No Plan being slower songs, Killing a Little Time more of just a kind of a straightforward rock song with a little bit of a melancholic chorus, but nothing that's surprising in the way that Black Star was, especially the title track.
Completely agree. I think it's an interesting collection, though. There's some cool stuff on there, and it just, I guess more than anything, this EP reminded me of why Black Star was so good. Like, Black Star was so good.
Best album of 2016, some might say.
Some might say that. It was so good, so interesting. I guess I understand now why, despite this being like his like last recorded tracks, this didn't make a ton of waves, because it's so clearly, here's this, you know, here's a few extra ideas or some interesting side thoughts from Black Star, but I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think if you like Black Star, these tracks are a surefire. Like, you're going to like these tracks.
Yeah, I'd agree.
You know, like, even Killing a Little Time, which, yes, like you said, it's a little bit more of a hard rock track in some ways, but it's still kind of interesting and weird. Mm-hmm. Like, it dips into just slow build. He describes himself as, like, broken curtains.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there's a breakdown where the guitars are just hammering into your head.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of intense and cool. And I mean, obviously tragic. It shouldn't be too excited.
It's the most metal moment on the album or the EP.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for saving me.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, if anything, it just gives you another reason to listen to Lazarus again and explore ways in which that song could be reinterpreted and reimagined with a new set of songs backing it.
Yeah, Black Star's great. David Bowie did a great job.
Great job on that one. But I think also that we were less convinced, I think, of his dying when the album was very first released. Those few days that we had between his passing and the album release, it was more about the mysticism and the uncertainty of what the lyrics meant that we were kind of taken by. And then suddenly when he died, it was like, oh, it all clicked into place. Now we understand what that album's really about. I think maybe this is me just after the fact and with the hindsight of knowing that here, but the death ideas are so explicit on these four songs to me that it feels so clearly like he's talking about his own passing. And maybe he left off these songs because he wasn't sure that he wouldn't survive it. You know, that there wasn't a way he might pull through it. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea that he went out on this last big mystery, like this last final like magnum opus for everybody to kind of like dig into and to use his death as art, I think is one of the most badass things I could think of that's happened in music.
One of the most Bowie things to happen in music.
Yeah. But yeah, I actually kind of agree. I think Killing a Little Time would be almost out of tone.
Yeah. Well, for the highlight reel, I'm going to take two tracks myself. I'm going to take Killing a Little Time, and I'm going to take No Plan, because I like that song and the peaceful idea of wandering around a space that's unlike any you've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it might be beyond the veil.
I'm going to take When I Met You. I think we're going to call it there.
It's a perfect match.
Wow.
All right, one more EP to get through, Mark. Back in parentheses, star with three dots over top of it, asterisk. That's the best way I can describe it. This is an electronica group person?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
I gotta be honest with you, I exclusively picked this because I wanted to hear you say the track titles. Okay. I really don't have any interest in this EP.
Well, the EP's like 7 minutes long.
Right.
So,
it's pretty neat. Yeah.
There's some pretty neat beats on this thing.
Yeah. I think it's better than I thought it was going to be. I think it goes some interesting places. Yeah. I think it's a little inventive. There's a busyness to the sound. There's...
Like a music box.
I like the
box.
Album art a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in case people can't look it up and maybe want to Shazam this or something, we'll play some bits from the first track here. But it's really peaceful to sit inside of that sound, even though it's just 2 minutes. And the album art is like you said, great. It's what looks to be like an old antique shop or like a tchotchke store with a bunch of things stuffed everywhere. And so you never know what you're going to find in a spot like this. And so the three songs are similar, but also very different.
Yeah, play that second track for me.
All right, here's a little bit of a bunch of cymbals.
Okay, so like, listen to what the percussion is doing there. I think that's what I like about this EP so much, is there's just so many like little intricate like beats happening, so many little intricate moments, and the bells sort of, I don't know, it's just so busy. There's something I like about that. There's something relaxing about it. There's something, I don't know, like calming to the sound. Mm-hmm. I like this EP, actually.
Yeah, for only being 7 minutes, it certainly leaves an impression, and not just because of the bizarre names. Though seriously, from an artist's standpoint, why would you name yourself that? You're never going to get any hits. How are we going to Google that? We can't look up anything.
But isn't that... Okay, now I'm thinking about it. Now you got me thinking about it, because isn't that what this is? Like, you look at the album art, it's just a bunch... You don't know what you're going to find. That's what you described it as. Maybe listening to this EP is the equivalent of being in a store full of tchotchkes and junk and just discovering things and finding weird little, I don't know, pieces of magic.
Yeah.
A bunch of garbage.
And in a world where all music is infinitely discoverable, suddenly they have hidden themselves inside of all of that.
Wow. This is album of the year, I think.
Of last year.
Yeah. No, this year.
Oh, okay. It traveled forward in time.
Yeah, that's how much of a discovery it was.
It's the kind of thing like, if you hadn't sent the link to me, I don't know how I would have looked it up on Spotify. You know, like I'm trying to wrap my head around how to access this stuff. It's a weird little thing that exists, and it's kind of cool that it does.
Do you want to know how I found it?
Yeah.
Spotify recommended I listen to it.
Whoa.
And I just was like looking around, and it was just like words, 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 nonsense, words, words. And it's like, what is this nonsense?
What is this nonsense?
Can you believe his highest listened to track has 543,000 listens?
Oh my God. Who all knows about this stuff?
That? I don't know.
It's like we've been inducted into a secret club.
Yeah. That's weird.
Yeah. Well, I, for one, am looking forward to more stuff from Crazy Bunch of Cymbals, the band, or the guy, or the woman. I don't know.
Yeah. Or just the computer. Maybe it's a
or
computer.
Just the computer. You're right. In this world of 2018, it could just be an automated robot that has...
This White Star world?
Yeah. Mathematically assembled the most pleasing beats.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm disappointed, though, in it because you didn't care to read all of the song titles, so I'm not going to take anything. I hate it now.
All right, well, I'm going to take the first track.
Okay, I'm going to take a second track, which is the number 9, but the head is small and it has poop on the side of it. Half of a moon, another number 9, but it didn't poop. The dark side of the moon, the Blair Witch symbol, a comma with something at the end, what looks like half of a checker, the letter M upside down to look like a W, but it's got a tail. Opening parentheses, asterisk, a circle, a really bold triangle, a plus sign, an asterisk, but it's in the wrong spot. It's at the bottom. Get back up top. What looks like a hut.
Yeah.
At the top. Tracing dots to trace a circle. Crazy loop symbol. A frowny face. Toucan Sam beak. Another hut. What looks like a vulva. And then an ellipsis. That's my track. Perfect. I'm taking from the CP.
That's a great one. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I'll take the title track, which is the title. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay.
All right.
Yay! Yeehaw!
A good EP roundup.
EP rounded up.
Couldn't have picked three different EPs to talk about. But that's how we do it here on the Weekly Beats. It's always a hodgepodge of a herd coming in through the EP roundup. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about G-Eazy's Billboard song. So stay tuned.
Sticks, I want to see how quick you is to pick up the sticks.
There have been 21 pop.
Never have, never will.
Well, let me show you something different today.
Certain things in life that happen to me, certain things that won't happen.
Okay.
You know, one thing's for certain and two things for sure.
You're going to see who made you like that.
What I'm going to do for you, though, I'm going to give you a collision course on life. We're going to play some Madden. We're going to play some basketball. We're going to drink some Hennessy.
Okay.
We're going to smoke some of this California.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see who's going to be the last man standing.
You're going to see what's going on.
Because I proclaim to be the best at everything I does, because you better know that part.
Okay, out here in Cali, smoking on this green that look like Luigi. I got my Fiji. I'm finna take your girl to the water. This finna be a breeze.
Alrighty, we are back and ready to talk about No Limit by G-Eazy featuring ASAP, Rocky, and Cardi B. It's the first rap song of the year, Mark.
I feel bad now that I'm sitting here like, I just want to listen to Cardi B. I should give all of this a fair shot. It kind of sucks to take one feature artist on a three artist thing and only listen for the one thing, right?
Yeah.
I'm a monster.
Well, you're a monster. It's a bummer. See, 2018, the year of no bummers. You're not a monster.
Oh, thanks.
You're beautiful.
Did it. I did it.
I got something that's going to make you feel better, Mark. You ready for this? Verified commentary on the Genius page from G-Eazy himself. Get ready for it. It's coming later on.
Few things make me happy. But that news?
Yeah.
It made me happy.
Good. I'm glad. All right, here's No Limit.
Okay. I'm swinging right away.
It's a pretty up-tempo beat right there.
Yeah, that grabs your attention immediately.
Yeah, that's ASAP Rocky there. It's not Jay-Z.
ASAP Rocky is pretty good.
ASAP Rocky is pretty consistent, I gotta say.
I agree.
You always know what you're getting into with that guy.
What did you get into with him last weekend? I guess hanging out.
I was promised not to say a word about any of that stuff.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just going to keep it on the down low. But you didn't hear it from me.
No, I didn't.
But something's coming.
Oh, holy. Holy. Yeah.
No Limit is the first single released from the rapper G-Eazy's third studio album, The Beautiful and the Damned.
True.
Here's some more details. On the post-chorus, Cardi B borrows her flow from the hook on Tear the Club Up Thug's 1999 song, Slob on My Knob. G included Cardi's verse after her recent hit Bodak Yellow. She took to Instagram to say that people weren't ready for this track. Gerald spent time promoting his album with this song throughout the summer of 2017. Why you gotta call G-Eazy Gerald like that? During the summer festival stops worldwide, G would usually play No Limit along with Pray For Me in The Plan. Cardi B's verse was first publicly previewed during G's Bud Light Dive Bar tour stop in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
What a note. The song was reportedly going to be released on September 1st, but for unknown reasons, it was released 1 week later on September the 8th. The second G-Eazy verse was only found on Spotify when the single was first released, while those with iTunes, Apple Music, SoundCloud, or YouTube only heard up to Cardi B's verse. The verse was removed from Spotify, but was later re-added as they moved closer to The Beautiful and the Damned's release.
Okay.
Broim Leandre underneath it has annotated saying, "It's just a club banger. There really is no backstory behind this track, except for people to get hyped to." Which I think is the best annotation on a trap song I've ever read. Certainly the most honest.
Stop asking!
It's just a trap song. Stop trying to make it important. Oh, man. We got some fire going down in the comments here. Annotation for the line, "If I hit it two times, then I like her." It says, "On Instagram, if you tap a post two times and you'll leave a like on the post, hit it is slang for having sex."
Right.
Champagne Homie says, "I think this meaning is ridiculous. He just the girl twice, so he likes her. I already wrote this, but you deleted my comment. SMH."
Shaking my head.
So he says first that meaning is ridiculous, and then he says, "I already wrote this, and you deleted it." So he's not mad at it being ridiculous.
Right.
He's mad because he wrote it first and didn't get credit for it.
Yeah.
A Champagne Homie.
That's some compelling drama. Oh, there's going to be AMC hour-long drama about this pretty soon.
We got four times. ASAP Rocky says, "It ain't safe." This is a reference to the song "It Ain't Safe," made by previous collaborator Skepta, featuring ASAP Bari, who also is, as his name suggests, a member of the ASAP Mob.
Yeah. Pretty.
Wow.
Consistent group. I think it's a good word used earlier. Consistent.
Consistent. Yeah. You always know what you're getting into with them.
Yeah. Like most always when an ASAP member is a feature on a track, they pull through with something good.
Yeah. That's going to be pretty good.
Yeah. That's kind of, I don't actually think there's that many, like there are like the like superstars of rap where you kind of know you're always going to get something good. Like that definitely exists. But as far as like groups of people, like collaborators, generally I don't find there to be any level of consistency. I think they're one of the only ones.
You know the best one?
What?
Effing Problems.
Yeah?
With 2 Chainz and Drake and Kendrick Lamar?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great song.
Yeah. I more mean like labels. Like,
oh.
You know what I mean? Like, this is like the ASAP Mob.
Have you listened to any of Brockhampton stuff?
A touch of it, but not really in any detail now. Not in any depth.
Because they've been getting the, like, "We're the New Odd Future." Certainly a lot of hype for those guys.
Yeah.
I listened to it a touch myself and found it intriguing, but haven't sat down with it anymore.
I thought it was a touch too much, what you listened to.
Well, let's go a touch farther with No Limit. Fuck with me and get some money. Ay, yeah, fuck with G and get some money.
money, no limit, I'm a fucking soldier. Ayy, always lit, yeah, I'm never sober. It's for 3 days in a row, y'all bitch coming over. Told that bitch to kick rocks, she act like it's a boulder. Ayy, Rory, shopping, that mean copping. Always popping, hella popping.
I don't know.
So there's your boy G Easy.
Sure. I think this is pretty good. I have no problems with this.
I don't know how crazy I am about the lines, but
what do you take issue with?
It's all about money, man. Why can't we just stop talking about money? Get money. Get some money.
Yeah.
Stop it.
I feel like it's just an easy way to, I don't know. It's an easy way to like feel powerful in a song.
It's a simple way to get powerful.
Yeah, well, it's a simple world.
Because guess what? You're a slave to the dollar, and I'm not about that lifestyle.
Welcome to Charlie's Politics Corner.
Bartering. Let me tell you a little something about bartering, okay?
Okay.
If I grow a field of corn, okay, suddenly I have infinite wealth.
Yeah.
I could trade that for a cow. I could trade that for a couple wrenches, maybe a whole pack of nails. I could trade that for a gallon of milk. The possibilities are endless, Mark.
Right?
With money, guess what?
What?
It's all made up. Money's not real.
No, I got a five.
No.
Abraham.
It's in your mind, Mark.
No, it's holding
it. It's a figment of your imagination.
I'm holding it. I'm holding it. I'm waving it. You see?
No, it's not real.
It's got a house on the back. There's a man on the front.
No.
Oh.
He is from Oakland, California. He is born Gerald Gillum.
Yeah.
I guess if your name was Gerald, you'd want to be known as G-Eazy too.
What's wrong with the name Gerald?
I don't know.
Gerald's a fine name.
No insults to Gerald out there. Beautiful and the Damned is his fourth album, so he's been here for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Don't see anything elsewise super intriguing on here.
Yeah, that's the thing with covering trap songs, Charlie, is that when you get right down to it, they're beats to play very loudly. They're things you just kind of enjoy, you throw on, you have a good time, and they just aren't built to explicate. And if you do that, you're only going to find holes.
All right. Well, let's talk about some of his Gerald's annotations here. Make a record with Young Gerald. Tour with Young Gerald. Take a pic with Young Gerald. Make some clothes with Young Gerald. Put Young Gerald in a movie with Leonardo DiCaprio. Feel me? Man, Young Gerald is a cash cow. Whatever I do, I supply myself to. When I say F with me and get some money, that's what we're doing over here. I ain't got time for nothing else. Here are, he's got a lot of annotations. No Limit, I'm a Soldier, A. It's a long annotation. Whew. Here we go, get ready. Okay. There's a lot of ways New Orleans and the Bay connect, but just for one, the independent hustle. You hear legendary stories in the town about Too Short slanging tapes out of his truck, and Mac Dre with Thiz, and E-40 with Sick Wedded Records. I think the similarities with New Orleans and the Bay is a very strong, unique sense of style and identity. Just some F all, y'all. We're doing this over here. And when you have a culture that rich and that strong, there's an independence in a number of ways. There's an independent attitude. F the majors. If y'all don't get us, then we don't need you. We're just going to build this on our own and do it our own way and not have it watered down for nothing. So that kind of approach to the game and doing it our own kind of thing is, like I said, the music in New Orleans from the 90s, from No Limit to Cash Money and all that, always resonated. Another thing is the tempos of a lot of New Orleans music and a lot of hyphy. Got a lot of that 9,500 beats per minute, 105 beats per minute, up-tempo dance music. I think there's always been that sonic connection and relatability between New Orleans and the Bay. This line is a nod to No Limit Records, a label headed by Master P that has undergone a number of name changes and has had a rotating cast of signees since its 1990 inception, including P-Sun, Lil Romeo, now simply Romeo, Mystikal, and Snoop Dogg. No Limit Soldiers was a WCW wrestling group that formed after Master P signed with the company.
That's true. All of that is true. Verifiably true.
Okay. That's one line. Always lit. I'm never sober. G-Eazy. The longest stretch I could go, I was on tour for like 5 years. That was fun. I'll go hard like 3 days in a row sometimes. And then on that fourth day, I wake up destroyed, just brutally destroyed. Like, bro, I need to drink some water. I need to meditate. I need to take a nap. Gee, you got to chill. But it's the rock star stories. They're definitely true.
Yeah. So, okay. Can I throw in a note here? This is the thing with trap songs that I'm always fascinated by is like, I love a good party story. Like, I love a good party story. No, nothing gets me going like a good party story. That Vice show about parties.
Party stories?
So good. I love that show. And all trap songs, whenever they get into their like, okay, that annotation is picking up on a thing that is like, that is a key to the song. I make money, I go crazy, I party is the whole song. But all trap songs do, they just mention that they party. They never talk about the party. Tell me what happened to the party. What kind of story is it? I got really drunk. What happened? Oh, man, I partied. Well, what do you mean? Well, how'd you party? I was so drunk.
Can't tell you about it.
I don't want a tautological loop of reminding me that you are under the influence. I want to hear what happened.
Nope. Not for you. If you weren't there, you can't hear it.
Okay.
He says, it's been 3 days in a row. Your bitch coming over. Told that bitch to kick rocks. She act like it's a boulder. Yeah, kick rocks, you breezy. Be up out, you know? I was messing with this girl, and I could not get rid of her. Literally for like 3 days, and that was kind of around the time I wrote the song. Yeah, I'm just going to leave that there.
That's what I'm talking about. Don't leave it there. Tell me about it. I don't know.
Kick rock is an expression used to tell someone to leave, deriving from the idea that people will inadvertently kick gravel and small stones as they walk. This girl could be trying to use her G to get things her man can't give to her, just like a boulder would be harder to kick than a small stone. Her reluctance to leave is more difficult to deal with.
Oh my god. That's a great phrase, and you're gonna have a time with the next line.
Oh man. Rari shopping. Let me cop it. Here we go. I went to the Rari dealership, Beverly Hills, Ferrari, and the guy was like, have you ever sat in one? And I was like, nah. He was like, get in. And then he was like, yeah, I'm a really big fan. I'm waiting on your new album. I'm like, either this is the coolest moment of my life, or you're a killer salesman, brother. You're killing it, because I'm feeling myself right now. I'm sitting inside the Rari saying, what? You're a fan? He was like, man, I thought you would have had three of them. That shit was so crazy. I just test drove it. I was like, yeah, I got to get one. It's just mandatory. I've been talking about Aurora for so long. I was like, this is fire. I took it around Beverly Hills, accidentally going to 100 just in residential street. I was like, whoa, this is fire. It just sounds cliche. I mean, you hear so many people talking about Lambos and Raris, McLarens and all this. Personally, I always seen Ferrari and associated with like Apple or Saint Laurent or Nike or Rolex. Just the class of that tier, the most iconic. The most timeless. And I've always been in love with Ferraris. And going down there, I was like, I'm just going to get a Ferrari today at Beverly Hills. And I just walked in, and I was looking at cars, having the dealer. He knew my music and all this. Just taking it for a test drive and being like, damn, I can get this? For real? That's definitely a moment in life where if you went in a time machine and told my 14-year-old self who was selling mixtapes out of my backpack that one day you might be able to turn these bars into this, it's just certain points in life, certain benchmarks, certain things that stand out, like taking care of moms, putting her in a house, getting her a brand new car off the lot that I used to drive past on the bus on the way to school every day. I took her to the same lot that I bought the bus pass every day. I bought her something fresh off the lot, and not just to place it on material things, but at the end of the day, Ferrari is Ferrari. Should I go red or black? I'm Batman. Black on black.
That
was a ride, man. That was a journey.
But, like, why did he write a novella about driving a car, and then the story about like this girl is like, oh, I'll leave it at that. Like, that's just, I don't care that you drove a nice car. Tell me the like good stuff.
I'm also thinking that that guy is the best salesman of all time. He's not a fan.
Yeah, totally.
He bought it. Yeah. He bought it.
He did buy it.
He did buy it, and he was very happy to do so. Let's keep going.
She's a popper, homie, hopping, ain't no stopping. Got the city on fire. Bitch lying on me like she tired. I'ma have to fuck around and call Kamaya. Whole stirring up the pot, I'm a liar. And girl, hit it one time, I'm a piper. If I hit it two times, then I like her. If I fuck three times, I'm a wifer. It ain't safe for the black or the white girl. It ain't safe, it ain't safe, it ain't safe, it ain't safe. Tell you.
When ASAP Rocky gets his bone on.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. He doesn't care about your ethnicity.
You're right.
I read that line because now I've pulled it up. You've read enough. These are so long. You read enough that I had to at least pull it up for myself. And the line, "She's a bopper," I definitely read as "She's a boner."
Mm-hmm. No, it's "She's a bopper." You know, in the Bay, it's not the only place that girls get called boppers. I grew up with "She's a ripper," "She's a runner," "She's a bopper." That's a girl that gets around. That's pretty self-explanatory. Then why'd you have to explain it to us?
I think the part where you went shopping for Ferraris was pretty self-explanatory as well.
I also love when people get into this like staggered flow and like they're just rhyming simple words back to back because they can't string together longer sentences.
Right. Okay, he's the producer on this, right?
I don't know.
He produces his own songs?
Sure. I don't know.
Okay. Well, because if he is, then like I feel that. Like, that makes sense to me. But we were talking earlier about Snoop Dogg, and when I'm talking about like trap production values, like,
yeah,
trap is all about being a banger. Like, that is where it goes to from like start mm-hmm. to finish. Except for, you know, there's some artists who do some more interesting stuff with it, sure. But like, for the most part, the stuff you're hearing on the radio, that is the point. So for Snoop Dogg to be having a trap song that sounds like that trap song sounded versus this, like, there could not be a better comparison for how a trap song needs to sound, like how important the production values are. Like,
sure,
this I will very easily throw in a car. Like, that Snoop Dogg song, I would drive around town and be seen as the kind of man who listens to that?
Yeah. Now, the beat is good. He is not a credited producer on this thing, I'll say. And it looks like on this album, he is not credited in any production roles.
That's disappointing because he is not bringing very much at all to the table.
Right.
I think his cadence is pretty flat.
Basic.
Yes. Like, I don't need even the lyricism to be on point if your cadence is good. If you've got something interesting even in your voice. I don't think he does. I'm surprised. I thought for sure he produces beats and wants to be the rock star too. But it turns out, no. So I don't know.
As is the case with a lot of these trap guys, they're barely holding up and they're relying on other more prominent voices to carry the weight. In this case, ASAP Rocky.
Yeah. Sure.
"Got the city on fire, lying on me like she tired." That line could be applied to anywhere. "I got the world on fire. I got everybody talking about me." That's what I meant to say. "I remember I was in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I guess it's a city. It might be a little town. I'm checking into my hotel. I was on tour. So I'm checking in. I give the lady at the front desk my name. She's like, 'Did you hear? There's an event down the street at the venue. It's sold out. Everyone's talking about it.' And I'm like, 'Baby, I am the event. Thank you for my room key. Goodbye.' Yeah, I got the city on fire."
This is a song in which G-Eazy brags about being popular in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Maybe it's a city. Maybe it's a town. I don't know. I was there on tour.
That is the funniest. Like, that is so good. He's like, "I have to write a song about this. Lincoln, Nebraska went crazy."
He didn't even drop Lincoln, Nebraska. He just said, "I got the city on fire." That doesn't mean anything. Yeah. It's not applied to any location. It's not. Just because it can be applied to anything doesn't mean it's good writing. Tell me you're famous in Lincoln, Nebraska. That's more engaging.
No, if it can be applied to anything, that does mean it's good writing. Yeah. This is just straight up stealing because I do not know this person's name, but there's a comedian on Twitter who said, "I can easily improve on that Hemingway thing." And so she wrote, "For sale, baby shoes never worn."
Yeah.
"Also for sale, baby coffin, super used."
Oh, man.
Yeah.
On the name Young Gerald, G-Eazy says, "Young Gerald is my alter ego. Young Gerald is the good guy. G-Eazy is the crazy psycho rock star, staying up 3 days straight partying. When I wake up out of my slumber, Young Gerald."
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have a ton of faith in his lyricism.
No.
In his work. But this beat is great.
Yeah. I'll give you that. Let's keep going.
Fuck him, then I get some money. concentrate. Apple phone, product case. Killer weed, rock a lace. Fuck the moat, buy the ace. Fuck the gold, drive a rave. Get some money, fuck the rollie, patty face.
Don't you love it when your guest artists totally upscale you at everything that you do? Isn't that great when you bring somebody on?
Destroy you.
Instantly. Like, okay. I think you and I were both a little like lukewarm on that Cardi B track last year, acknowledging, hey, it's pretty good, but we want to see some more stuff from her before we're totally over the moon.
Right.
Like, that's good flow right there. That is ear-catching. That is energized. That's complex and lyrically saying some stuff there, man. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I will maintain that track really hasn't warmed on me over much. Like, I think it's okay.
Yeah. Right.
I think what has warmed on me is her cadence.
Yeah.
Like,
she got swagger.
Yeah. She exists within that beat in a way that G-Eazy, I feel like, it's just kind of holding on to the beat and being dragged around by it. I feel like she is piloting the ship, so to speak. She's also aware of where the power in her voice is. Like, she knows when to accentuate it. And building to her own presence like that, like, probably more a role from the producer, I would guess.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think you need that awareness to succeed at this. Like, this is a... something to be said for about having really good guest verses, but you don't want to be outclassed that bad, right?
I mean, in a matter of seconds, it's like, whoa, this is all of a sudden way better.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, man. Poor young Gerald. He didn't stand a chance.
Yeah. And you know what? Cardi B has no, as far as I'm concerned, no ability at euphemism.
Yeah.
She just seems to just say what's happening or what she wants. There's no wordplay,
but she says it in a way that's kind of like, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Who who says Apple phone?
Apple phone.
Who says Apple phone?
Yeah, like Apple the company.
Yeah, that's not weird.
She is an Apple phone, but it's a Prada case.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Whatever. I don't know. I think that is a funny thing to say.
It's about getting that beat in there. It's about getting that cadence.
Okay.
Samsung Galaxy.
2010s
and hip-hop, especially the beginning of 2014 to today, made an extreme change in this genre. The previous decade, 2000s, had other style of technology, fashion, and music. Today, female and male rappers use their mature side to show how hip-hop has changed. Golden, dark, sparkly clothes from big brands, having bestsellers in the Apple company, or changing the appearance, especially women, as Cardi B references at the end.
Okay.
That didn't make any sense whatsoever. Here we go.
So here's the problem now, is that now you have to wait for G-Eazy to come back.
Yeah.
Like, after that, now he has to return. Hey, me again. I test drove a car. Like,
hope you didn't forget about me.
Yeah.
On the line, put a white boy on, says, oh, I might turn G-Eazy out. I was with my homie in New York from the Bronx, and I'm like, yo, did she just say put a white boy on a song? He's like, put a white boy on, says, oh, I might turn G-Eazy out. And I was like, that's way more fire. That's clean.
He's like, wait, my bad instincts at lyric writing? And the guy's like, no, her bad instincts at lyric writing. Oh, that's way better.
Cezanne is a seasoning combining coriander, garlic, cumin, and annatto, primarily used in Latin America. Turnout is slang for making a modest person more sexually deviant. Cardi B is Dominican, and she thinks that if she sleeps with G-Eazy, she'll make him want to start dating Latin women.
Okay.
That's a pretty good annotation.
Like the part where she acknowledges Jared from Subway.
No, it's Gerald. Young Gerald. From Subway.
Oh,
Young Gerald from Subway. I hate this guy.
You hate him?
I hate this guy.
Why?
Just... like, you know how you're, like, upset about corporations these days? You're all up in the space. Like, I can't be kowtowing to all these people that are just out there to get my money. I'm like that way about the young trap artists of the world. And the more we listen and talk about this stuff, the more attention that they get. And he's not saying anything interesting. There, at no point does he have any authority over what is put out on his label. He's just cranking the stuff, getting other people to guest verse on here that are clearly better than him. He has not even close to the talent level of these people. He never will be. So why does he keep doing this kind of stuff?
Why does he keep doing this kind of stuff? This is not the worst trap guy we've heard.
No, but I don't know. Maybe it's the annotations that are killing my vibe on this guy. But
he clearly has no like interesting like things to talk about his art.
Right,
like,
he has nothing to say. Nothing. He brings nothing to the table.
Yeah, like that. I agree with. Sure,
he's completely unnecessary.
And you know, if we're gonna just sit here and have a real conversation, I might point out that that's all part of the corporate thing, man. That's where he gets the money from. That's how he got here. That's how he stays here. So, production companies, record companies.
In late 2016, Viceland began season 2 of their series Noisy with a feature on G-Eazy's home, the San Francisco Bay Area. It also featured local legend E-40, who is great. The documentary focused on police brutality and racial profiling, especially in the small town of Vallejo, where the rate of officer-involved shootings is 38 times the national average. The people starring in the documentary, everything that happened was normal and almost expected, but the documentary crew was shocked.
Okay, I'm going to take some issues with that annotation, because is that an annotation of the line, "It ain't nice, you can study where I'm from on my vice land"?
Yeah.
So, okay, what... that's kind of a leap to me, because this is going to be followed up by a bunch of lines about him having sex with women. So to annotate the line that way, I understand that gives you context. Like, this is what that Viceland episode was about. But it indirectly gives him credit for talking about social issues in a way that the only thing he said was, "It isn't nice." Like, that's all he said.
It ain't nice. It ain't nice.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes with these genius annotations, what is beneath the surface or things that people make oblique references to, it almost makes it seem as if the artist is a little bit more woke, a little bit more trying to say something socially than they are. I think it's an instance of that. I don't think G-Eazy is compelled to say something important. I think he just, "It ain't nice" just rhymes with that. You know what I mean? I don't think this is anything
right.
He's saying.
Yeah. He's going for the easy rhyme rather than trying to say anything meaningful.
Yeah. I don't know.
We got some more bad lyrics coming up, so brace yourself.
New to me, this my life, fam. I could pull a million girls from a mic stand. Pull one at my show, cause I like fans. Later on, I got two in my night plans. Man, this year I had 301 nightstands. Keep a Costco pack of rubbers in my nightstand. Damn, Daniel back again with the Saint Laurent. Hey, they sent me product. Yeah, this retarded. Hey, this was free. Hey, bitch, you bought it. Bitch, you want my dick. Hey, bitch, get off and hit it one time. I'm a pipe.
I love his puppy yipping at the end of that. Yeah.
Yeah. He's cute. Okay. If there's one thing I love, it's lexical ambiguity.
Mm-hmm.
So on the line, "Man, this year I had 300 one-night stands," could very easily be read as "I had 301 night stands." I like that. I like he's bragging about that. I went to IKEA.
301 nightstands.
I bought the entire floor of nightstands. I have them all.
One for almost every day. Well, I'll have you know that 300 days is 82% of the year, so G-Eazy will need a lot of condoms if he wants to keep that pace up. Costco is a wholesale store that sells items in bulk at cheaper prices. So G can get a 40-pack for just $25.
Oh, does
that's
it link?
That's an ad for Costco.
It
that's
links?
An ad for Costco, my genius annotations.
I'm following the link.
Oh, my God.
I'm going down the rabbit hole. Let's see
it's
how far
a
it goes.
Link to Costco.
$24.99, one mixed pleasures. This person has made a decision that I don't want regular ass condoms. This is an FSA eligible item.
Wow.
100 condoms. Mixed pleasures. Don't call your brand mixed pleasures. Was that, hey, I heard you spent that with Jeezy last night. Yeah, how was it? It was mixed. Like, in terms of pleasure, I would say it was mixed.
Mm-hmm.
Mixed pleasures? You don't feel that?
No.
I think that's a ridiculous thing to call product.
How soon do you think the Damn Daniel thing is going to be dated?
Right now. Dude, no, that is 100% right dated. That, like, right now that's dated.
Damn Daniel is a meme that was created by two friends named Josh and Daniel who posted several Vines.
Vine is dead. This is the most dated shit in the world. This is 100%.
I love that line. Damn Daniel back again with the Saint Laurent. There's no rhyme. There's no effort. There's just meme references that are dated. And
but okay. That's it, though. Like, a lot of people who don't have the talent behind the trap music, people who have just been sort of elevated there, are like bubbles. Like, they fall out of the culture. They no longer keep up with, like, what is happening in the moment, the things you need to reference to keep up with youth culture. I think, like, G-Eazy is probably one of those guys. He's probably on the other end of the bubble, right? Like, I don't know. I don't hear people talking about G-Eazy.
No, because he sucks. We still have 5 seconds to go. We're not done yet.
Well, I actually like the song.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think it's all right.
Here's what I'll say. G-Eazy is bad, and everything that he does on this song is bad. But the beat is good, the ASAP Rocky stuff is good, and the Cardi B feature is really good. I'm conflicted, though, because it's like it's still his song, and if I listen to it, it gives him plays and it boosts his favor, and I'm kind of like, man, I want to do that. Sure. I want to give him more respect than he needs.
I mean, yeah, you do you. I don't have really any hostility towards Jeezy, I guess. I just feel like he seems like kind of a dope. But I like the people he's featuring. I like whoever's producing him. Seems all right. So, you know, fine. I'll take it. Honey. Oh. Great.
That's the last 5 seconds there.
Good.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to turn it down.
I'll take it.
But it's close.
Do we have any interest? Well, you know what? Probably not. Never mind. I was going to say, do we have interest in watching the Genius video where he explains the song? But that's probably just what those annotations are for.
Yeah. I get the sense that he didn't write those annotations, that he was like talking into a mic when he said them. They come across as conversational.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, there's that.
Great.
All right. Can I tell you about what else I've been listening to this week?
I would love it if you did.
All right. I listened to some good rap music this week, Mark.
Yeah?
How about that cupcake?
How about that cupcake?
You listen to that?
Nope.
Oh, man. I had no expectations going in. We talked about it briefly last week, flirted the idea of discussing it on the show. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to wonder if maybe we should have, because This thing is certainly worth talking about. And old Cupcake here, she's got some bars on her. Can I play a little bit for you?
I would love it. I would love that.
Okay. Just a note, this is highly explicit stuff. She styles herself as kind of a shock sexual rapper with some really explicit lyrics. So, kids, plug your ears. Actually, I don't know if this first clip is that or not. It's just a warning. I make these niggas look stupid. A lot of motherfuckers full of shit, so you know they walk around pimping. I've been dropping friends like left and right, to be honest, none of it hurt me. Cause I'm man mouth water when they see me, I'm assuming that nigga thirsty. I spit at 16, but no, it ain't sweet. Mess up the beat with a flow so neat. No, we can't kiss, you can't even kiss me. What's fun, drop square pants, don't be OT, that yellow, yellow, yellow shit. Niggas bugger, get a grip. Can't take me nowhere, but wanna feel, man, you a motherfucking trip.
That's really good.
That's really good, right?
Yeah.
Oh my god. That's track two of the album called Cartoons.
Damn.
And so, like, from that, I was like, oh, okay, this is some serious stuff here. She's not messing around. I expected it to be kind of like, when they mentioned it was sexually explicit, kind of like playful and gross and kind of cringy.
Yeah.
But this is straight up, like, she is not messing around. She is here for her heads. I'm going to push it a little bit farther because it gets more impressive as the chorus goes through. Carrots like Buzz Bunny, I'm Batman, robbing for the money. Strip a bare feet like the Flintstones, make a Tom and Jerry her way home. I'm a snack, so I track Scooby Doo's. Give them Smurf dick, that's balls blue. I don't look for niggas, so fuck Waldo. Bitch, I'm cocky like Johnny Bravo. Hey, that's
great.
That's amazing.
Is that Johnny Bravo reference?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
That song is 2.5 minutes. And she does not stop.
I'm sold. I mean, I gotta listen to it now.
It's right there. That's the album. Here's what for me does not get much better than that on the way down. That's kind of the peak, and it's a track two. But I will say that the album is really solid overall. I had a ton of fun with this thing. I think that Cupcake is a force to be reckoned with. And while she has made a name for herself as a shock rapper, she has an insane amount of talent that I think your boy G-Eazy could take some notes from. That's how you do the rapping thing right there, man. She's funny. She's witty. She's got force. She's got swagger. She's everything I'm looking for in a rap artist right there. It's some top-notch stuff.
Yeah, that was crazy. That beat was crazy, too.
Yeah, it's got that, like, music box roly-poly, like, jingle-jangle stuff.
Damn.
I'm going to take it a little bit further. We're going to get real explicit on this one, but it's a real banger. It's called Duck Duck Goose. If she miss a dick appointment, sloppy toppy for Poppy Lee, sloppy Joe Shook. I only call you Captain because your dick is off the hook. I can't make your dick stand up like Statue of Liberty once we fall. So hard. Top the head of the dick, duck, 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 goose. Head of the dick, duck, 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 goose. Get the dick up and running when he fuck this goose. Covered in all my cum, the dick be looking like a goose.
Wow.
So there's that.
That's pretty funny.
here's another one. I was hungry as hell writing this shit. I don't even get no fun. Let's go. Cinnamon toast crunch. Cinnamon toast crunch. Cinnamon toast crunch. Cinnamon toast crunch. I got bitches wanna box me like I'm cinnamon toast crunch. So there's that.
That's Should we cover this next week?
Maybe. It's worth talking about.
Damn.
I highly recommend it. I think it's for sure at least worth a spin or two.
Yeah, no, I'm sold. I'm there. I'm telling you.
All right. Maybe we should talk about it next week because the pickings for this week are also pretty slim. We'll talk about that later though. Couple other things. That was the high point for me this week. I went back, like I said, listened to Never Left, which I liked quite a bit, from Snoop Dogg, and also listened to Doggy Style for the first time the whole way through. I know, like, the big hit singles from that thing, obviously.
Hell,
but
yes,
that is a vibey album, man. Throw that on and suddenly it's the California.
I have a hot take on that album.
Okay.
Snoop Dogg's Doggy Style is better than the majority of his scene. I think it's underrated.
Yeah.
I think it's better than The Chronic. I think it's better than Straight Outta Compton. I think I think on that album, Dr. Dre, all of his skills as a producer are just better. Like, he just writes better beats on Doggy Style. I think Snoop Dogg is what made rap music both, like, he was hard at that point. He was talking about some rough stuff, but he made it fun. He made it like he was a human. That album is extremely good.
Yeah.
Underrated. Well, I guess it's pretty appropriately. People love that album, but I'm just saying it's great. It's a classic in a way. I think it should be elevated more than it is.
Yeah. A ton of fun the whole way through. Lots of great beats. I mean, obviously simpler because, you know, just rap was a simpler genre, I think, back in the day.
You think so?
In some ways, less complex. I think the beats were more straightforward. And lyrically, it doesn't really modulate much from where it is. But still, a ton of fun, ton of personality, like you said. It's just bleeding through there. It's great.
What about when he's in the bathtub?
Yeah, the opener. It's great.
That's such a good album.
A couple other things, minor stuff here. Jack White announced his new album, Boarding House Reach, is out in March, which I'm very excited for. I've liked Jack White's solo stuff quite a bit. He gets a little weird on the track Respect Commander. He's described this as a back alley stabbing kind of album, so we'll see if that goes through or not. I found Lazaretto a bit disappointing, but still enjoyed some songs off that thing. Frankie Cosmos has announced a new album due out in a couple months as well. You love Frankie Cosmos.
Okay.
Here's Jesse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sounds like Frankie Cosmos. No, I actually like that song a lot.
So you're not digging it.
One last one here. My man, Andrew WK, party champion, has announced a new album that's also due out in just a couple months. If you haven't seen the album art for this thing yet, Mark, please look it up. It's this painterly cul-de-sac, this midnight scene of him standing in the moonlight with a microphone in his pants, staring down a serpent that's eyeing him up from one of the neighbor's yards.
Wow. What's
I don't know, but I
there?
Love it. So here's a little bit from Music Is Worth Living For. I like Andrew WK a whole lot. I find him incredibly endearing. His message of positivity is essential for 2018, the year of no bummers. So, yeah, bring it on. Let's party.
The Freddie Mercury of partying.
That white jumpsuit is something special.
I was trying to make it like a no doubt is the blank of partying joke, but I just couldn't compare anything to no doubt.
Yeah.
You're no doubt is the Gwen Stefani of partying.
All right. That's all I got.
Wow. Okay. Well, I listened to kind of a lot, but I'm going to mainly talk about three things here. First of all, I listened to this a while back and I think we might have screwed up a little bit by not paying more attention to Goths
from
by the Mountain Goats last year. It's definitely a Mountain Goats record. It sounds a lot like the Mountain Goats with a goth tinge, but there's the opening track, Rain in Soho, certainly bumping something off my top 50.
And you love
last
that Che Guevara record they did a couple years ago, too, right? Why. Okay.
Yeah, that was a better album.
This is still great.
That was a better album for sure. But this is pretty good. But
okay.
Raid into Soho is something else. Let me introduce you to Raid into Soho.
Than the ones we've lost. Nothing sharper than a serpent's tooth. Nothing harder than the gospel truth. Though you repent and don sackcloth and try to make nice, you can't cross the same river twice. The river goes and the water flows. But no one knows when the back gate closed.
That's some gothy stuff right there, man.
You feeling that?
Was so I nothing gothy. Sharper than the serpent's tooth? That's a goth lyric if I ever heard.
Yeah. What's great about it is that's not the kind of writer John Darnielle is. He just dives fully into the culture and in a earnest way. I like it a lot. And it's very good album.
Cool.
All right. I listened to a slew of my favorite rap albums from the 90s. A
veritable sloosh
of classics. I slooshed. So I had last week talked about that Ben Westhoff book. And I've been thinking about it a lot. I finished it. I have been maybe processing all of what there is to learn in the book versus of the people behind the music and what the music did. And what gangster rap in general, what effect it had on hip hop and the future of rap. And I left angry. I left the book angry last week. This week, I feel like I have more context. I've had more time to digest. I have a pretty low opinion of Tupac Shakur, which, you know, I guess I understand what an icon he is and how important he is to people. But I think things he did should maybe be put into the forefront. Because you're familiar with the idea of like the East Coast, West Coast debate, right? Like so that wasn't a thing that no one thought about rap music that way until Biggie Smalls, Tupac Shakur fight happened, right? The problem is people know Tupac Shakur as an image, as the musician that he was, right? Like they know him through his albums almost exclusively, and then a few quotes in the media. So he was using the East Coast, West Coast thing in reference to that almost as like a marketing thing, like almost as this is my brand. Is this the West Coast is better than the East Coast? And it was exacerbated a little bit by West Coast albums getting lesser reviews than East Coast albums, but there was no beef. But Tupac really pushed that point in a way that Biggie Smalls did not. So Tupac was going out there kind of escalating fights, and Notorious B.I.G. was more or less saying, we're still tough, but let's not make this worse. And meanwhile, Tupac was getting involved with Suge Knight and doing some crazy stuff. And a lot of his actions led to gunfights happening. Crazy things happened. But I think gangsta rap was a extremely emotional response in a lot of ways to people who were ignored and oppressed. And it is a less thoughtful response than I think some of the more contemporary stuff from the time in the rap scene. But I think it was in some ways necessary to put people into a box, to say to people like, okay, we'll acknowledge the ugly stuff too. So I don't know. I guess that's just me saying, I've been thinking about this stuff a lot, man. It's like complicated. Like Ben Westhoff makes an interesting point in his book, which was at the time, a lot of liberals were embracing rap music and then backing off because to embrace rap music was to embrace sexism.
Yeah.
It was like you had to do one or the other and it was confusing. So yeah, I don't know if that's as a culture, we're even done dissecting that yet. We're not done having that conversation.
It sounds like that book was a catalyst of a maelstrom in your life, man. You've done a lot of introspection.
It was just a really well-reported book. I mean, his prose is not always strong. the conclusions he comes to are sometimes weak, but he is a good reporter. And yeah, I don't know. Cool. It was a just an interesting book. It was a catalyst for me revisiting a lot of my favorite rap albums, though, including Doggy Style and Ready to Die by Biggie Smalls, which I think there's an argument to be made as the greatest rap album in history.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Mm-hmm.
I also revisited Ice Cube's Death Certificate. And
yeah,
that's good. That's a very good album. Ice Cube is very good. I wanted to play a clip because I've been revisiting and reappreciating classic diss tracks. And I think there's few diss tracks in the history of rap music that are as classic or as good as Ice Cube's No Vaseline, in which he essentially calls out every single member of the NWA.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to play a clip of it. This is how it starts.
Oh, yeah. It ain't over, motherfuckers.
Like, important to note, there was like a huge debate between Ice Cube and the NWA, and he doesn't address it until the last song, as if, oh, I forgot. I forgot about you guys. All right, here we go.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Y'all motherfuckers ready for a W? Get the fuck up!
Right. It's a minute of NWA quotes, and then it's this.
The bigger the cat, the bigger the pillage. Who gives a fuck about a punk ass villain? You're getting cut real quick, an easy dick. It's nothing like MC Ren shit. Tried to tell you a year ago, but Willie D told me to let a hoe be a hoe. So I couldn't stop you from getting gay. Now let's play Big Bank, take Little Bank. Tried to diss Ice Cube, it wasn't worth it, cause the broomstick fits your ass so perfect. Cut my hand, I cut them balls, cause I heard you like giving up the draws. Gang bang by your.
There's a great line in which he accuses Eazy-E or Dr. Dre of crawling inside of Eazy-E's ass. It's pretty good.
Killer beat on that thing, too.
Yeah, that's a great track. It's a great album.
Man, Ice Cube is pretty cool.
Yeah. That certificate's good. All right, so here's the thing. I've been excited about this all week. All right.
Oh, man. You and your reading.
Read another book.
Suddenly, this podcast has become Mark's book club.
I know,
like it's crazy. Feared it would.
This is all a scheme. So I've been reading this book. I should probably pull up the author.
Okay.
About it's called "Meet Me in the Bathroom" by Lizzie Somebody, and it's the history of rock music, the revival of rock music in New York from 2001 to 2011. So. We're talking about bands like The Strokes and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, The Libertines, LCD Sound System. The Libertines were English, but regardless. So I think her name is Lizzie Good something. Let me pull it up. The author of the book was a waitress at the restaurant where Julian Casablancas was the bartender. So she was sort of involved. Lizzie Goodman, that's her name.
Yeah.
She was sort of involved in that scene, right?
Song.
So it's an oral history of that time from a lot of these figures in rock music. And it's kind of incredible. It's a well-made thing where she'll have quotes from an unbelievable number of people. Like there's a... She interviewed The National, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Interpol... and you learn, it's a good book, but you also learn a ton of gossip, such as the time where Julian Casablancas almost seduced Matt Berringer's girlfriend during a Strokes show. So I've been keeping bookmarks of what I thought were interesting stories.
What's the book called?
These people. It's an audio book.
The Strokes song.
You Meet Me in the Bathroom. Yes. I'm only halfway through it. I'll probably have to edit around this because it's going to be, my bookmarks are not clean, but okay. So I think this is a clip about how the guitarist for the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, their first demo, guitarist's forgetful dude. He left their first demo, the master, like their only copy,
in
his pants, and he put them in the wash. And they mastered it from that.
Hard to find because it sounded like crap. Dick once told me that it was on a cassette, and he put his jeans in the laundry, so the tape went through the laundry, and that's what they mastered it from. It was like, you know what, dude? I believe you. It sounds like it was recorded in a dumpster.
Alright. I'm just gonna keep going.
Not in a sexual way.
Oh, okay. This is a clip. This is from,
Okay.
What's his name? David Cross. Who's worked with the Strokes a few times, opened for them a few times. Comedian.
Oh,
about
wow.
the time he made out with Julian Casablancas.
David Cross. I remember being in that bar upstairs at Irving Plaza, and Julian kissed me, and I'm going, whoa, what the fuck? Also having this crazy rush of emotions, because I know he's not gay, and I'm thinking, oh, that was fucked up. That was weird. I guess it wasn't really unpleasant. That's nothing I'd ever do again, I don't think. Huh. That was interesting.
That was interesting.
Oh, this is a story about how the Strokes worked with their producer.
Gordon is such a great interpreter of musicians. Julian won't say that hi-hat is too trebly, turn the bass up or the treble down. He'll say, I need the hi-hat to sound like the rich guy who hangs out at the party and doesn't talk to girls, waits for them to come and talk to him. Gordon is like, okay. It's almost verbatim how I've heard him describe a hi-hat sound.
Okay.
Okay. I just thought it was pretty good. Yeah. There's a... I'll play maybe a couple more here, but...
Yeah.
Everybody was hammered and doing drugs all the time, it turns out. There's an interesting element of the book, which is... before... it really begins in the late 90s. The Giuliani era of cleaning up New York, and... It was before Brooklyn was a thing. Like, there was no art scene in Brooklyn that was, like, a big deal. And basically all of these bands went there and sort of popularized that culture. Like, went over and sort of, like, lived in these cheap apartments in Brooklyn where neighborhoods were crappy. And there's a lot of stories of bands talking about how they were in an apartment where they would, like, be talking to people in the hallway and there would be someone shooting, like, heroin next to them. It's a lot of kids who were, like, well off enough that they could afford to live in a crappy apartment and not feel too worried. And in an interview about her book, Lizzie Goodman talks about interviewing James Murphy and sort of trying to gingerly talk around, like, it seems like Brooklyn became a big fashion symbol and pretty much every city needs a Brooklyn. And, like, sort of trying to get to the question, like, didn't you guys play a big role in gentrification and, like, cities needing to operate this way with having, like, young people go to, like, the quote-unquote authentic places of the city? And before she could even... She was trying to, like, not be insulting. And before she could even get to the question, James Murphy was like, yeah, it was our fault. We did that. Maybe see. I don't even know what this one is.
First introduction to Julian was one night when there was a party at Ryan's house. I guess the Strokes had had a show that night, and they ended up there. Julian came in really fucked up, took some girl into the bathroom, and broke the shower. Miss Callum, it was mayhem. You'd walk out at 7 a.m. to make eggs, and there would be piles of people on the floor. I'd be walking over them screaming, I have a job, man! Nick Valenci'd be in the kitchen, still awake, saying, I really admire your work ethic. And I'd go, fuck you. Get a job, asshole.
There's some really good stories. Cool. It's a great book. I recommend it if you like party stories and stuff. But yeah, Lizzie Goodman's Meet Me in the Bathroom got me to listen to...
Which are great.
The first three Strokes albums. Yeah, yeah, yeah. A bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
I think they descend in quality, but...
Yep.
I will say, Is This It that's is literally one. Flawless. It's immaculate.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool, that's
man.
It for me.
You've been on this reading train.
Yeah. I've been reading about too much politics. I gotta, like, get my brain focused on something that's not destructive. You know?
Well, Mark, let's think a little bit creative here, because we got an email from a happy listener. Send us an email. weeklybeatshow@gmail.com is where you hit us up. Season 3, we're trying out some email features. I think we'll read some email. This is from Cal in Memphis, Tennessee. He says, "Hey, Charlie and Mark, with all this news about Oprah running for president and Kanye still up in the air about a potential 2020 run, it got me thinking. Which singer slash band leader slash artist would you most want to see in the Oval Office? Does President Chance the Rapper sound Gucci, fam? What about President Lord? I know Charlie would be all about that. Thanks for the episodes. Your best of 2017 were a lot of fun, Cal and Memphis." President of the United States. Thank who you taking? Can you imagine a worse one?
Well,
no. Yeah.
Worse than Oprah? Worse than Oprah?
Julian Casablancas.
Yeah, definitely.
According to your book.
I mean, obviously. Yeah. Not to... it goes without saying.
You don't want any of this.
I don't
none
want
of this.
That,
I no.
Don't want that
Let's get real politicians. Let's get no. informed citizens. Let's get politics as usual, please.
Can I'm going to say something that I just realized I do believe. And again, goes without saying.
Wait.
You
just
not
realized
a good idea.
You believe it?
Definitely don't actually want that, but.
You had an epiphany.
Yeah, this just occurred to me. Yeah, that Killer Mike is technically more qualified to be president than Oprah Winfrey. Because he has a list of, like, part of the Oprah Winfrey thing is she doesn't have any stance on politics. It's kind of insane to think she'd be good at something we don't know what she thinks. Killer Mike actually has a pretty long and detailed list of what he thinks as far as
and
policies.
Works with Bernie
and he's a community
Sanders
political organizer. That's true. So you have a pretty good idea of what kind
Killer
of duty
Mike.
Is.
Yeah, that's probably the best option as far as like
that's mine.
History goes. Kid Rock, please.
Kid Rock.
Yeah.
Did you know he
and
was
just
being
like everything
seriously
else that guy seriously considered it burnt down in flames and was horrifically considered from the get go. Ball wet a bada dang da dang diggy diggy. Can you diggy diggy that, Kid Rock? You suck. Yeah.
Wow.
Weekly Beats burn.
Oh.
I don't think Lord can be president because she's from a different country. Is she from Australia or New Zealand?
Yeah.
No.
I don't think she was born
those,
in America.
You know what countries? Yeah.
She should
from
show
New Zealand.
Us her birth certificate.
Yeah,
I would believe it.
You know what? Eddie Vedder. Let's make him see a political run. Yeah.
Eddie Vedder?
He's a political guy.
Why?
Yeah. He's always like performing at Greenpeace stuff and making a change for the positive. He's got real negative views about Ticketmaster.
Okay. All right. I'll counter that.
He's Irish. He can't do it. Yeah. See, that rule cuts a lot of people out.
Damn. You're right. Yeah. Okay. Who do I counter? Instead of Eddie Vedder, Eddie the Skull guy from the Iron Maiden
Is
album.
He British? Well, I don't know. I mean, he's a cartoon character, so I don't know if he is automatically the. Yeah, like it's from the band who is
British,
but that doesn't necessarily make him British too, does it? That's too bad.
I think it does. It'd be weird if they were
he's
real
very clearly an American.
Like, no, he's an American.
Yeah.
I didn't know Iron Maiden was British.
London, baby.
What about Andy?
You know, he
WK?
Did form his own political party. The Party Party. You're exactly right.
The Party Party?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I would join the Party Party.
Can I read you its political statement?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
I just Googled Party Party, and it's just a bunch of IMDb links to Party Party, the movie, or Party City. So give me a second here. I'm going to keep Googling.
That sucks.
It does suck.
That sucks. All you right. suck.
Here is Andrew W.K. with his speech on the party.
I voted for a bunch of presidents. I've seen them come. I see them go. They promise you a bunch of stuff. And things don't get better.
The same families come up, same issues, same story, just different faces. So nothing's really progressing.
Democrats, Republicans, two sides of the same coin. Nothing gets done.
It's hard to decide who to vote for because nobody is addressing any issues that average citizens like me care about. I'm not sure where this country is headed.
Hello, my name is Andrew W.K., and I have a very important message. It's no secret that the majority of Americans are frustrated, disillusioned, and concerned with the current state of our nation. The two-party political system is broken. It's created an us-versus-them mentality, and that's kept us from reaching our highest potential. And what's frightening is that it's blinded us to the fact that underneath that all, we want the same things. That's why I'm asking for your support to establish a new political party, not one based on the rhetoric and dogma of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, but one that transcends both. Today, I'm proud to announce the formation of the Party Party. If my experience as a partier, an entertainer, and a human being has taught me anything, it's that many of us have lost faith in our political process. Well, now it's time to restore our faith. Over the last few years, I've worked closely with voters to develop a platform that really is all-inclusive, a platform that truly brings all Americans together. I've already filed the relevant paperwork with the Secretary of State, and now I just need a few more signatures to get this over the line. So that's where you come in. Please visit thepartyparty.us and sign the online petition to officially qualify the Party Party. Let's send a message to both parties and show them there's a new party in town. Thank you.
Wow, that was surprisingly restrained from Andrew W.K.
Ernest? Yeah.
No, he was very clean.
Was there pig's blood?
There's a lot of people that are smiling and are trying to work hard for a better country.
Yeah, I don't know. If Andrew W.K. isn't willing to cover himself in pig's blood like on that album cover, well, then I think he may have been too affected by political correctness.
I'm gonna sign up.
No thanks.
Yeah, let's join the party together.
Yeah. Let's get a party going. God, it would be so annoying because they'd be playing the same song for every event.
That's a great song, though. All right, Mark, let's transition into next week. Let's talk about where we're headed next. The Billboard has spoken, and at the beginning of the show, before we hit the record button, you heard me say, oh, no. I'm pleased to announce why I said, oh, no. That's because the song we'll be covering next week is Thunder by Imagine Dragons. I hate those guys so much.
Oh, God.
Thunder by Imagine Dragons is our focus for the Billboard next week. Not a lot in the album release column this week. Mark, if you're cool with it, let's talk about Cupcake. Okay. Because my other option was What Happens Next by Joe Satriani. I mean... Also worth maybe listening to. I don't know.
Okay, that's interesting.
I'll probably throw it on. It's kind of hard to talk about that guy without just talking about him in general, and I don't think a new album's going to bring a whole lot to the table. We know he's a crazy guitar player, and that's pretty much all you need to know. It's like, wow, he really played that guitar super crazy this time around.
It's those
licks.
There's
a whole lot to talk about Cupcake, so. Let's do that. Ephorize.
Okay. Yeah. I'm ready. I'm ready to start filling this 2018 playlist out, you know?
Belonging on a list in a 2018 playlist. Okay. So next week we'll talk Imagine Dragons and Cupcake. Horrific combination if I ever saw one. But nonetheless, we hope you'll join us. Hit us up on the social media feeds. If you've got an email, send it to weeklybeatshow@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook and your podcast feed and drop us a 5-star review. That never hurts either. And what the heck, if you throw an album or an artist in there, we'll talk about them on the show. We'll give you our thoughts on that individual or that artist or that band. We're here for you. We want to just make sure you're getting what you need, you know? It's not all about us. It's the year 2018. No bummer. Yeah,
it's all about me.
Let's keep it strong going into the next week, okay? Okay.
All right.
Thanks for joining us, folks.
Let's keep it tootling.
Bye! Outro music! Yeah. The president said he wants to make America great again. Fuck that shit. We gon' make America crip again. As I look around, I see so many millionaires with skin like mine. Don't pretend like I'm with that bullshit your president been tweeting. Them black boys is balling out, the whole block been eating. You punk pigs, we calling out. I'ma line y'all on up, then start my own league. I'ma sign y'all on up. I'm thinking who my heroes be. Thank God for the Negro League. Colin Kaepernick was blackballed.